Good evening and welcome to the Icecast. My name is Shane Chebsey, and on the Icecast we talk to comic artists, writers and publishers about their work, their lives and everything in between. And this evening on the Icecast I'm very happy to welcome 2000 AD absolutely amazing artist Patrick Goddard. How are you, Patrick? How are you doing?
Not too bad. You know, the sun's out, so it's better than it has been.
Oh yeah, that sun. I'm not used to it yet.
No.
It's like taking us all by surprise a bit, isn't it?
He said, what were you supposed to do with the sun now? Yeah, we're supposed to go outside and enjoy ourselves? That doesn't seem right.
Yeah. And like, I still wear a coat. You know, put a coat on and I'm sweating on the way home. You know, like, oh, bloody hell, why am I wearing a coat?
I was like that the other day. I was dripping wet. It was like, I couldn't believe it.
It's daft, isn't it? But you're coping all right with the isolation, keeping yourself busy and everything?
I suppose the same as most freelancers. It hasn't really changed much. It's just I just have the whole family at home. That's the only issue at the moment. So not as productive as I would like to be at times. But
yeah, have you got kids sort of interfering with your work?
Yeah, just a bit. Oh. Yeah, I get the knock on the door. Can you help me with this? I've forgotten everything. You know, my son, he's 14. His maths are beyond me now. Yeah. I can't help him at all. I can just about help my daughter. But my son, he's asking me about quadratic equations. I said, look, I did them 30-odd years ago, and I can't remember them at all.
Oh, yeah, I'd be useless if anyone asked me. It's funny, isn't it? It's very rare that the maths you learn, you know, you use in real life. But the other day, I did actually, my friend was is moving house, and he was trying to work out the incline of his garden. And they'd they'd give him some measurements. And I said, oh, that's Pythagoras. If I was able to remember how to do it, I could tell you the incline of your garden. Unfortunately, I can't because it's been a long time. So, yes, it would have been useful. That one time in my life, it was useful.
I completely
forgot it. Yeah.
You've waited all your life for that one moment to thank that maths teacher. And then it just goes to pot.
Yeah. I imagine he's probably in a ditch somewhere, my maths teacher now. Yeah.
God,
he's a bit of an alcoholic, so yeah.
School was such a long time ago now, it's scary.
That's a scary thing.
The 90s, only 5 years ago.
Yeah.
10 years ago.
Yeah, I still can't get over the fact that the 90s is a long time ago. It's still,
yeah.
It's just creeping up on me now. So talking of education, we'll go back. We'll start the interview properly, and we'll talk about how you got into comics. But did you always find drawing something that you wanted to do? Was that something you did at school and then on to college?
Yeah, I sort of always enjoyed drawing. I got an older brother, and he sort of got into comics, and I just sort of copied him. So I was always trying to compete, and sort of so I practiced a lot. Mm. But I think I noticed when I was sort of about 8. Maybe 10, and the teachers pick you to draw stuff for the school wall.
Yeah,
you know, you and about another 5 kids. So I thought, positive, encouragement. So, and that kind of spurred me on then. And then I just practiced a lot, God knows what I would be like these days with all the distractions of video games and phones. And, at the time, you just had your sketchbook and your imagination. And that was it.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? So our generation, when we were I don't know about you, but when I was drawing as a kid, that's all I did. I would spend days and days and days, just like in the summer holidays, my parents would be like, here's a sketch pad, go away. And that's
that
all
was
I
it.
Did.
It'd be sketch and another page and another page, and it'd just all be pouring out of your head, your imagination. And
no fear. No fear as a kid. There's no sort of, is this good enough? You really, I don't know about you, but I never had that when I was younger. I just draw and draw. I think it helped that, if your parents say everything's great, that probably helps a bit, doesn't it? What were your parents like? Were they supportive of you doing art?
Yeah, they sort of never pushed me to do anything else. They just pushed me to sort of whatever made me happy. Mm. And, I went on to art college in the end.
Right.
But they were sort of happy with that. My brother went to sort of accountancy college or something like that. Oh, and I went to art college. So we had different routes. But, they were always happy and they were proud.
That's cool, man. And your brother being like into comics as well. Mm. Do you think that competition between you and your brother really helped you hone your skills at a young age?
Oh, definitely, because he was always better than me, and even throughout my teenage years and beyond. But he's he could have made a comic artist quite easily,
really.
But I think he just sort of, the willpower. I remember going to UCAC once, and I think I was about 16, 17, and my brother would have been 18, 19. And we saw, we met Bob Harris.
All right.
The X-Men editor, so the 90s. And my brother showed his pages, and he wanted him. He wanted him to draw.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, okay. So they paid us, me as well. I was like a tag on. I was the plus one because I was only young.
On his coattails.
Oh, yeah. So it was, I got paid. My first ever professional job was doing a submission for Marvel, doing four pages.
Wow.
An X-Men issue.
They paid you for it. Wow.
Yeah, it was just a submission. So the comic already been out. But yeah, they paid me £182 for four pages. Yeah. And I sent it on cartridge paper. That's how much, that's how little I knew about comics. My brother was, I luckily drew it twice the size, but I didn't know about Bristol board. I didn't know anything else. I didn't know, didn't have a clue. But I remember my brother panicked a bit and,
yeah,
I don't know. I think he always enjoyed drawing for himself rather than somebody else's script.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? A lot of artists have got that ability, but actually, you know, when the chance comes, they sort of stutter a little bit. It's like, do I actually want this? And that's a big decision to make, isn't it? You know, to actually say to yourself, I'm going to go for it. I'm going to be a professional artist. I'm not going to take the safe route. And so, you know, for most, and I wouldn't criticize anyone actually who turned around and said, do you know what? I've got a degree in accountancy. I'm going to be an accountant because I'm not sure I can make it as a comic artist. Yeah. You know, I think that's perfectly valid.
You always seem to sort of have more sort of raw talent than me.
Mm.
So natural ability where I've learned how to do things. You know, I remember by the time I was in my 20s, I could draw better than him, but that's because I studied anatomy and storytelling a little bit more. But he just had, he was good at drawing superheroes, and he'd have that John Buscema thing about him where they look quite powerful looking, where
mine
look a little stiffer. But I quite happily work from his thumbnails now. He's got a real good composition and a comic eye.
Yeah.
But whether or not he could do that from a script, I'm not sure. When it comes from his own idea, his own story. But he hasn't practiced for years. He drew a dread recently, I think last year, and I put it on Twitter, which was pretty good, you know, to be fair, for somebody who hasn't practiced for years. But yeah, but it definitely helped me sort of competing with him. He's always wanted to get the one-upmanship on him.
Yeah, well, that explains a lot. Because, I mean, your work is very accomplished. One of the things that strikes me about it is the draftsmanship is really good. You know, your handle on anatomy and you know, the things that a lot of artists struggle with. It's really solid, your anatomy. You know, I always noticed that. And I think when you said about the competition, I thought, that's all fitting together. Because that does put you above an artist who basically just toils alone, I think. Is you've got someone to constantly push you, you know, with competition. Yeah. But it is work, isn't it? I mean, what you said before about your brother having talent, but yet you had to work. I totally empathize with that because a lot of people say to artists, I don't know about you, but sometimes someone will say to me, oh, I wish I had your talent. And I'd get really annoyed with that because, like, I haven't got any. I just worked really hard from the age of two or whatever. And I've worked on this all my life and it's really difficult. I have no natural talent for art. I really don't, you know, but no one will believe that. And it's, and I know it's probably wrong to be annoyed because it's just from their point of view, it just seems like talent. But if you work on something all your life, you're going to get pretty good, aren't you?
Yeah, I think so. It's like, I think the thing you notice most, once you actually start drawing, you improve a lot. And, you know, if somebody asks you to draw for just a month, if you're drawing for a month every day as an adult, you will improve no end. And it's just a snowball effect. Then the more you do it, the better you hopefully get and you keep improving.
Yeah,
but there are times where I think I'm functional. There's things where I draw, like my page layouts, where I need to tell the story, and I almost go against what artistically I might want to draw. But I think, well, that doesn't tell the story as well. So I'll do well the script and try and fit everything in that needs to be in. But I really think about what A goes somewhere, B goes there, C goes there. Try and think where the word balloons go, and I'm not as like Robin Smith, like ring the bell, finished at 6 o'clock and give myself time deadlines. But you have to be rigid, you know. I remember chatting to John Davis Hunt and he gets up at 5 a.m.
Does he?
And he gets, every day. Wow. And he works and he gets most of his work done by lunchtime then. And then it's almost like a relaxing thing after lunch.
Yeah. Well, that's fair play to him, the discipline to do that.
Yeah. I'll be in bed at 9 o'clock.
Yeah. I mean, 5 o'clock. I haven't seen 5 o'clock for a long time.
Yeah, he must have been part of the SAS. That's what it's that training he must have done.
It must be. But that's a great discipline, isn't it? If you can be disciplined like that. I mean, all the artists I talk to who do work like that, who do have a discipline and do just stop at a certain time, you tend to find they're pretty quick anyway, so they can do that. You know, I mean, that helps, doesn't it? I mean, are you a quick, do you work quite quickly? I mean, do you can you manage the page a day regime?
I can draw a page a day. Mm. I think if I start early enough, I try and pencil a page by lunchtime and then I sort of see what inks I can get. I'm slower at inking. I'm really, really slow at inking. Mm. It's because, you know, you do it all traditional still.
Yeah.
And if you make a mistake, I don't know. I think I just seize up. I think I did this from inking. I think I hold the pen too hard.
Could
but
be.
With penciling, I'm a bit looser.
Mm.
But it'd be hard to go back with somebody inking me. I'd be quite happy for somebody inking, but I don't know how tight I would pencil these days.
Yeah. Your pencils really loose, are they?
Yeah, because, you know, I draw in blue pencil, then I tighten up in HB pencil, and then I'll ink over that then. But I'll ink over the blue pencil at times if I know what's there, especially if there's something in the background or something. But, I think pencil and inking, I do about 3 pages a week. I can manage.
That's comfortable, like.
Yeah.
I suppose that's okay for 2008, isn't it? Because you know, you're not doing like you're not doing a 22-page monthly book like you would be with Marvel and so it sort of works, I guess.
I think if I had to do Marvel or DC, was it 22 pages in a month, I'd just have to pencil. There's no way I could ink.
Yeah.
And there doesn't seem that many who can.
No.
You know.
That's why I'm always amazed at the ones that do. You know.
Yeah.
Some of them will pencil, ink, and colour.
Yeah.
Like, what the?
I think with the digital, it's almost like, because you digitally ink it, you're almost like just penciling over your roughs again. So you're not sort of inking in the same stage type thing. And I assume that would make things a lot quicker.
Mm. And if you make a mistake on a digital ink, you just take it and do it again, don't you? I mean, traditional, yes, you can correct errors, but it's not easy, is it? You know,
no.
I mean, I find a great satisfaction in real inks on the page. Yeah. I love it. I don't think you can really. I mean, the digital inking is amazing. You know, I've seen the results and I've had a go at it, and it's incredible what you can achieve. But for me, it just doesn't feel or look as good as traditional.
I can't get the same feel on a tablet or a screen than I can get on a traditional. I like the bite of a paper, you know.
And I
like the mistakes, you know, which, especially when you're flicking ink or you're just sketching with a dry brush, you know, it's not as you want it, but it works and you kind of surprise yourself at times.
Yeah, those happy accidents are great. Aren't
I've had plenty of unhappy accidents as well.
We won't talk about that.
I'm just so bad digitally. Even on Savage a couple of years ago, I was actually cutting out panels to replace them
rather
than just Photoshop, drawing them separately and just Photoshopping it. And I just like, what am I doing? I need to learn this stuff.
Well, it's what you feel comfortable with, though, isn't it? What you know, what for me, digital is slower because I don't know it as well.
Yeah.
You know, I could speed through stuff, you know, traditionally because I know the material, and it's what you're comfortable with, isn't it? And there are artists that do both and say that, you know, different projects demand different things, and that's valid as well, I think.
I've started doing digital because I draw like costume designs for Doctor Who.
Yes.
So I work with a costume designer, Ray Holman, so he gives me all his ideas and I sketch them up for him. And I did those on like marker pens and everything, but I had to bite the bullet. I said, let's just go digital. I just do it on my iPad now. And this series, I've done it all digitally. So it hasn't been too bad, but I am slower.
Yeah.
And you just think, I wish I was a bit faster. And then once you get fast enough, comics take over, and then you don't do it again for another month or something. And then you're slow again. And it's like, it's one of those things you have to keep doing. I remember Dylan just saying, when somebody pays you doing it, you just learn. You just learn to do it faster.
Yeah,
you find the shortcuts.
Yeah. Because, of course, Dylan Teague, a mutual friend of ours, you've worked with Dylan, haven't you, on a few projects? Yeah. Is that with Dylan?
Colouring,
yeah?
Yeah, he's colouring Aquila right now, so he's moaning to me constantly. But when I first got in at 2000 AD, Dave Bishop put me and Dylan together. because he was from Cardiff, and I'm just five miles outside Cardiff.
Right.
And so he was the first professional that I ever really met, and, you know, told me what's what and how to sort of cope with things. But he inked a lot of my stuff in the early days.
Right. Oh, so it wasn't just colouring then, it was inking as well.
Yeah. I got in at 2008 just as a penciler. I didn't really want to ink my own things. But then it wasn't enough work to sort of warrant just being a penciler. So, you know, if you start inking your work, you sort of take more time, and you can, between jobs, it's just worked out better financially to ink. But I would have just been happy just staying as a penciler.
And when did you start working with the 2008D, and how did it come about?
I'm one of those weird ones who got in on my one attempt.
Oh, really? You were a lucky one.
Yeah. I remember sending sort of samples. I was left our college in the mid-90s, and I was sending samples to, like, Marvel, but you'd have to send it by post. It could take 6 months then until you get reply. I remember having a lovely reply from John Robert Sr., which just blew my mind.
Yeah.
But then you just keep knocking on the door. But then I looked at sort of new 2000 AD artists like Simon Fraser, Frank Quitely, and I thought, oh, okay, because in my head, a lot of 2000 AD art was all painted.
Yeah, it was at the time, wasn't it? Yeah, back then it was.
I saw those and I went, oh, okay, I'll give 2000 AD a go. And Dave Bishop saw my Judge Dredd sample, and he offered me, he gave me a script then, a tryout script, and he was happy with that. And then he gave me Sinister Dexter, which is about 2000.
Yeah.
I probably did it in about 1999, but I think it got published in 2000 then.
That's amazing, really, because a lot of the time, you know, a new artist will just get in, you know, be given a, what are they called? It's gone out of my head now.
Submission skips, Future Shocks.
Yeah,
I was lucky. I had a dread. I was given a dread. But then Cam Kennedy drew the dread, and I almost made myself sick looking at his pages, thinking, oh my God, they're going to compare me to Cam Kennedy.
Oh, so he did the actual strip in the mag, in the prog, should I say.
Yeah.
And that you did a tryout on.
I did a tryout of it as well.
Wow.
So luckily, I did see it about a week or so after I did the submission. So I wasn't influenced by it too much.
Well, yeah, that's an easy temptation, isn't it? If you see someone else draw it, it's like, oh yeah, that angle makes sense. That, you know, that storytelling works. Why would I do it any different? Oh wow, so, that's cool. I mean, going back to when you were into comics as a fan before you started working in comics, was it 2000 AD that appealed to you, or were you reading all sorts of stuff?
I started reading from a very young age, so it was like Star Wars Weekly in the late 70s.
Yeah,
that was my first comic. My grandparents used to sort of order that for me. My brother started getting the Hulk and Spider-Man UK weeklies, and he went on through getting like X-Men, the UK reprints, what was it, Thor? I think there was a Fantastic Four, but it was all like the John Buscema Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Or like the class, you know, to me, they all seem new, but I didn't realise they were like 15, 20 years old.
Exactly,
And then it was like the Marvel Superheroes Monthly and Daredevils. I didn't really discover 2080 until I was sixth form.
And then
some of my other friends. I was aware of Judge Dredd because I think I had some of the hardback annuals about the mid-80s.
Yeah.
But I just never saw the comic anywhere.
Right, that's interesting. Because, I mean, back then you'd have thought it would have been, you know, prolificating all the news agents, but I mean, that's how I discovered it in the news agents, you know, like everything else back then, you know.
I remember getting Battle Action Force for years because there was a TV advert for it, and they had the SES Force on the cover, and I thought, oh, I want that. And maybe I was you know, brainwashed by toys like Star Wars and Action and Action Force, so you know, and I got that for years, and I loved Battle Action Force for a long time.
That was a cool comic, actually. I remember picking a copy up in a local newsagent, and they were giving away the free Action Force figures.
I remember walking all over town
looking for the different ones.
Yeah,
because there were about four different ones they were giving away, weren't there?
Yeah.
So if you went around town, you could get all the different figures. I remember getting Snake Eyes.
£0.25.
Oh, those were the days.
I picked up a Batman comic the other day. It was £6.
Oh,
and he died.
The pain.
Yeah.
But I mean, what are your thoughts on, I mean, we're digressing a little bit from the timeline, but I'm interested. What are your thoughts on the price of comics at the moment? Do you think that they're reasonable, or do you think they're just, they're getting too much?
When I was sort of collecting American Monthly, so I think they were only about 60 pence up to a pound at the time. And then now I think a normal newsstand edition is £3.50, just under £4.
Something like that.
I can order 8 comics or 5 comics a month like that. Mm. You know, and I tend to, nowadays, I don't buy many floppies or whatever, but I just end up buying the trade paperbacks.
Mm.
And you just read it from start to finish. Just picked up the Brian Hitch Batman the Grave. I think that came yesterday, so I'll have a good read of that.
Mm.
One other thing I got. Grendel, Kentucky, by Tommy Lee Edwards.
Great. That is I mean, I got the floppies of that.
I bought issue 1 and I thought, oh, okay. And I thought the trade paperback would be out in months, but it came yesterday. Yeah. Great.
They don't hang about with that. You know, the trades, they come out pretty much as soon as the series is finished these days.
Yeah. You know, and you know, that's the thing. You could buy, 5-6 issues, £4 a pop, or you can just get the trade paperback for about £10 less.
Yeah. So, yeah. It's crazy, isn't it? And
it is pricey. They are pricey. Yeah.
I mean, I love my comics. I love getting them every month, you know, but it has almost got to the point where I cannot justify it, you know, buying a comic, which is hard because, you know, when it's a big part of your life as a total fan, you know, and I love the format. I love reading comics, but it's really hard to justify, you know, £4 or £5 for a 32 page book that is only 22 pages of story.
You know, I always used to sort of, there were, when I was younger, I used to follow certain characters a little bit, but most of the time it's following the artist.
Yeah.
And there's not many monthlies now where an artist will do 8 to 10 issues a year on the same strip.
Never happens, does it?
I find that frustrating, especially, you know, I love Lee Weeks and I'll buy any of his stuff.
Same here.
And I remember getting his Daredevil years ago in the 90s and thinking, that's amazing. Then looking at certain other comics of the 90s, that's not so good.
Yeah. He did stand out as one of the better artists, didn't he? And he still does. I mean,
I know. And you get the ones who are not very good making millions. Yeah. Or making lots of money, and then you got Lee Weeks and going, oh, really?
I mean, you don't. I mean, he seems to just fill in on stuff. Yeah. I mean, but he's one of those artists.
Yes, he works.
Everything he does is just brilliant.
Yeah,
you know, absolutely brilliant. I mean, the little bit he did on Batman, I picked up every issue of that, and I'm thinking this guy. You know, no disrespect to any of the other artists who worked.
Yeah,
on that, you know, but for me, just. He's so far ahead, you know.
I just love his storytelling and you know, how he beats the story.
Yeah,
and I think he's, you know, as you said, the other artists are fantastic as well, but his just appeals more to my taste.
Yeah, yeah, it's all taste at the end of the day, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, who were the artists for you then when you were young and you were impressionable? Who were the artists? Who were the artists that sort of made you notice? You know, you were saying before about you used to follow characters, then you started following artists. What was that moment when you thought, "Oh, I noticed that artist is better than that artist"? And...
Yeah, it was from the Marvel Superheroes Monthly, the UK. You'd have John Byrne X-Men, George Perez Avengers, and Alan Davis on Captain Britain.
Yeah,
and Alan Davis is probably a big influence on me in my teenage years.
You know,
I just used to copy everything I could find off him and then work out how on earth he drew his anatomy the way he did.
Yeah.
But yeah, those three, the ones that I sort of picked up a lot, used to buy all their stuff then. And then, you know, How to Draw Comics in Marvel, invaluable.
Great book. Absolutely brilliant book, I think.
Yeah. So they were sort of the three younger ones. Yeah, I remember Vanyu in Battle Action Force, or the Vanyu brothers, when you found out recently. I didn't realise there's two of them. Yeah, so Al Williamson on Star Wars, but I didn't really know Al Williamson. It was just, wow, I like that artist. Good.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because, of course, he inked Lee Weeks, didn't he? On that Daredevil
quite a bit.
Because he was inking John Romita Jr. beforehand. And I mean, I just adored that whole run, you know, that was written by Andersenti mostly at the start.
Yeah.
I just thought Al Williamson's inking. It's just, I mean, and his pencils, but his inking is just He can make an average pencil page look spectacular, yeah. I think.
He's like Kevin Nolan.
Yeah. Yeah.
You just think, you know, please ink me, please.
It's beautiful.
Elevate me to greatness.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's beautiful artwork, isn't it?
Kevin it is, Davis? Yeah.
I mean, everything he does, and it's instantly recognisable, isn't it?
Yeah.
His work.
You know, and you can see some of the pencils underneath, but sometimes you just think, just looks all look like Nolan.
Yeah. Yeah, some inkers just take over, don't they?
Yeah.
It's like when, I remember when Barry Windsor-Smith inked Herb Trimp. On Machine Man, you know.
Oh God, yeah.
Remember that? And everyone, when you say to people, you do know that, you know, it was Herb Trimp that actually did the pencils. Really? I just thought it was Barry Windsor-Smith. He just took over. He did his inking was spectacular. He coloured it as well. And it's like, whoa. But you've got to appreciate that penciler, because that's the guy that told the story. You know? I mean, Herb Trimp, for me, you know, a lot of people say, oh, he's a very basic artist, whatever. But what a storyteller.
Yeah. Comics are.
Yeah.
They're there to tell the story. It's a bit of a bugbear. If I can't read a comic page in one go and have to reread it three times, I don't think they've done their job properly.
Yeah, yeah.
It might look beautiful, but it needs to tell the story for me. But that's, as you said, just taste half the time as well.
Sometimes, yeah. But I think, you know, storytelling, there's a right and a wrong way of doing it, I think. I think, like you say, you know, if you've got to read a page three times to figure out what's going on, there's something seriously wrong with the storytelling there, isn't there? Yeah. You do see it a lot in modern comics, you know. I'm not, you know, not pointing anyone out, but occasionally, you know, quite high profile artists, I'll be like, what have they done there? That storytelling is not good. Beautifully rendered, but that's part of the challenge, isn't it, of being a comic artist. Is, I mean, did you always have that? Did you always feel that storytelling was something that you had a natural affinity to, or is it something you really had to work at, like your draftsmanship?
It was, when I was in art college, I was taught I had a good visual memory and I could sort of draw things from life better than other students and things like that. But a lot of the time, I almost went into sort of product design, and I could come up with lots of different ideas the same product, but it was always hard trying to choose the same one. So even when I do my thumbnails now, I might do five different panels for one shot and then try and work out how it works best on the page and choose the best one that fits. But I can think of different ways of how to shoot it if I was a cameraman. I don't know, it's just, I think because I can visualize in my head. My wife, I said, just draw what you see in your head, and she goes, I can't see a thing. And I went, really? Close your eyes. He goes, nope, not a thing. And I said, am I not right then? I thought everybody could just draw simple shapes or something, but I don't know. But
I think we take it for granted, don't we? I think, you know, visualizers, you know, artists. I mean, I'm not a great visualizer. I mean, I've seen, when I look at artists who are great visualizers who can draw things out of their head, and I always think, God, I wish I could do that, you know. Yeah. But I think as artists, I think maybe we do perhaps take that skill for granted, that ability to see things in our head and then put what's in our head onto the page, you know, because a lot of people simply can't do that. But I do wonder how much of that is because we've always been doing it since we could pick up a pencil, basically.
Yeah. And reading comics, I think it's subconsciously, it must always sink in. I remember teaching kids and I was just telling them the importance of the gutters. And because some artists I've seen, and going back to storytelling, the way it's all cut up, and they think, no, the gutters are there for a reason. That's your brain filling in the gap until the next panel.
Yeah.
And some, when they just have so many overlapping ones, it's kind of just takes all the beat of the story or the pacing out of the story for me.
I totally agree because, I'm not a fan of these overlapping panels or panels without gutters where they just merge from one panel to the other, because that's how you, like you say, it's how you express time, isn't it, the gutter?
Yeah.
And if it's not there, it feels like the moments are merging. And unless that's what the effect is that you're trying to achieve,
sparingly.
Yes, very sparingly.
I may have done like a diagonal panel on my Judge Dredd submission. And Dave Bishop just said, never do diagonal panels. And I think it took me 15 years before I had the guts to do one in 2018. And he'd left for 10 years by then.
That's brilliant. Oh, dear. And, of course, some artists do it great. I mean, I've seen...
Yeah. You know, Alan Davis, he does all these angled ones.
He does. And Brian Bolland does diagonal panels sometimes, doesn't he?
Yeah.
It can be done, I think. But, yeah, I think it's learning the rules before you break the rules. That old
idea. Exactly.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I love that, though, the fact that you waited that long.
I know.
You put the fear of God into you.
Yeah. It was almost like, you ever do it, you're never getting work again.
Yeah, okay. You're out. Yeah. Diagonal panel, get out.
How dare you?
Oh, brilliant. So you've worked at 2008D, you've worked on a lot of the major characters, and we've already said, you know, Sinister, Dexter, you did some Chopper, Savage, Dread. I mean, it's quite the CV, to be honest. And you've also worked with Keith, haven't you, Richardson, on Sniper Elite?
Yeah.
Which is from, did that come from Battle?
Sniper? No, it was the Rebellion's computer game.
Of course it is. But I'm not a gamer. I'm not a gamer, so I don't know that stuff.
Yeah, I'm not a gamer as well. So, but yeah, it's from the video game. And then I did a mini comic for it, I think for Sniper Elite 3, that went with the game. Mm. And then when they were doing about the fourth game, they wanted to do a proper comic this time.
Right.
And I think Rebellion acquired Battle by then. So they wanted to put the Battle logo on there.
That's where I've remembered
just
that.
Just test the waters a bit.
Yeah. That's where my brain has misremembered. I must have seen the Battle logo on the book.
Yeah. And I got to put the Rat Pack in.
Ah, right. Cool. Yeah.
And I met Carlos Esquerra, and I got to tell him. Because he was proud. He had his phone. He did a Sniper Elite cover with the Rat Pack. And he was so proud of showing it off to John Wagner. Yeah. We were all at a convention. I said, that's my comic I work on. I'm drawing your characters.
That's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's really nice. What a nice memory that is.
Definitely.
Was Carlos a big influence on you and your art?
I didn't know much about him until I sort of started working for 2008 so much. Mm. So, you know, I've got plenty of hardbacks now to go through. I did the spine drawing for the Judge Dredd Mega collection. I got sent a copy, so I got the whole set.
Nice. That's nice.
My
isn't
wife
it?
Didn't think so.
Because of the space it took up.
Yeah.
Are you one of the comic artists whose wives, I don't want to see comics in my house?
Yeah. I have not one piece of artwork in the house whatsoever. I have a little room with my toys, as she puts it, and all my other stuff, and that's it.
So for all those who are, because this is an audio podcast, so for those who can't see the screen, Patrick's sitting in front of his CDs, his toys, his books, and his posters. So that's your little cave of all your geeky stuff, yeah?
And, she'll enter the cave every few months and say, oh, that's new. I went, oh, yeah, you know. Is it, and you're too old for that? I went, no.
Oh, God.
She'll just notice little things appearing.
But she tolerates it, obviously.
She tolerates it just about.
It's always a bit of a struggle, isn't it, when you're living with someone who doesn't quite get your fascination with something. I think we've all been there. I think there's quite a few people probably listen to this now just nodding, going, I know exactly what you mean.
She has no interest in it. She just, get upstairs to your hobby job, get some money in, keeps you grounded.
Well, you do need people like that, I think, in your life.
You do.
If you just surround yourself in a bubble of people who are like you just don't really progress, do you? I find.
No, I wouldn't think so.
It's good to challenge yourself with different types of people. So, you've done that. You've worked in the magazine as well. Do you have aspirations to work outside of the Rebellion umbrella and, Marvel or DC or anything like that?
I think I did back in the day. I part of me would still love to sort of maybe draw Superman or Batman, but it's not as much as it used to be.
Mm.
You know, I'd love to draw a Star Wars comic one day just to tick the box.
Yeah.
I'd love to draw a black and white Captain Britain series.
Oh.
That would take a massive box. I get Rob Williams to write that.
That'd be good.
I don't know. I've only ever did one work one piece of work for Marvel. I did a bit part of a Hulk annual about 8-9 years ago.
Right.
I had to take a pay cut to do it, and it was quite a big pay cut. And I just thought, if they came calling, maybe I'll do more work. But I'm more than happy. You know, just at this age now, I'm happy somebody pays me to draw.
Yeah. Well, it's nice. You've obviously got a really good relationship with Rebellion, you know, and you've got a good knowledge of the characters and an affinity with the. Yeah.
So I was just going to say, you know, Matt is great. You know, hopefully I've never annoyed him or, you know, because he keeps employing me. But yeah, he's best editor I've ever worked with, quite easily.
Oh, that's nice. I mean, what I was going to ask, actually, a slightly related question is there a sort of favourite writer that you've worked with? Somebody who you feel a natural affinity to?
I don't know. You noticed certain writers a little more sort of visually easier to work with, you know, the way they explain. Gordon's pretty good. Gordon Rennie.
Yeah.
Because I've worked with him recently. Pat Mills would give me tons of reference and he'd be so super helpful about making it possible. But Alan Grant was always quite visual. Always remembered. I didn't do much with him, but it was just sort of, it just seemed to flow quite naturally. I didn't have to, you know, I've had some scripts where I've had to dig out a thesaurus because I didn't know what they were on about. And I won't name names, but I just think,
a little bit too cerebral.
Yeah, you know, I need to know if it's daylight, where they are, who is in the room, and then let me go from there.
Yeah, the basics. That's it, isn't it? Tell the story. What do I need to do to tell the story? I don't, you know. A lot of writers want to put a lot of detail in, don't they? And sometimes, I've heard of artists say, well, I just ignore certain parts of the script because I know what they mean. They didn't really need to put that there, you know. It's interesting. I mean, for some artists, it's probably nice to get all that extra detail in there because they can draw up, you know, it can inspire them. But I think, I suppose, and that's the reason for the question, really, is because I was interested in sort of which type of writers that you gel with, you know. And it's obviously the more visual writers. Yeah, that's interesting.
It's like part of me, you know, I would love to have a Marvel script style. So you're just given like a one-page plot and you just, it's difficult to do in 6 pages in a 2000 AD aspect, but it would scare me, but I would love to try it once. But I do like the structure of full scripts because you know what to put in, what to leave out for the most of it, for the most part. But
yeah, I am fascinated by the Marvel style, actually, of writing.
I am.
Because obviously growing up, that was the stuff I read more so than the full script stuff. And I always, and as a kid, and I think for kids in general, that sort of more visceral sort of animated way of telling stories is, you know, it's good for young readers. You know, because they can just absorb it really, really quickly. I still love it now. I do enjoy those comics that, okay, you might not be getting much the money's worth out of them, but it's nice sometimes, isn't it, when you pick up a comic and you can read it in like 5 minutes because it's just bang, 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 bang.
And I remember reading about John Byrne when he was writing Iron Man, and it was John Romita Jr. And he was just getting, if he was lucky, an A4 page of script. The plot, and but John Bond is a genius, just a genius, and he just I'll knock out 22 pages of this, and he just knew how to do it.
And then you've got that extra layer, haven't you, where the writer will then go in and add the dialogue,
and then they're
inspired by what the artist has done. You know, I love that. Well, I love that to and fro, you know.
Yeah, it was quite strange with Savage because Pat would change the dialogue because he'd get the art back, and he'd go, you know, he'll cut words out because it didn't need it anymore, or it just didn't, you know, it didn't fit. But most of the time he said, well, the pictures told the story, so it didn't need the words, which is always nice. So it was quite surprising some days when I got the prog and it was, changed that.
Wow.
But it was like, it just worked. He was just happy to work that way.
Yeah. Well, that's a sign that the storytelling was good, you know. And
I hope so.
Well, Pat, I know, you know, from other people I've spoken to, is a bit of a taskmaster, isn't he? He doesn't suffer fools, does he? Let's put it that way.
You know, I think I met him twice. And the first time he gave me a big bear hug and everything because I already worked for about 3 years on Savage. Yeah. It was the first time I met him at Bristol, I think.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, what are people on about? But, you know, I've heard other people have had issues.
Yeah. I mean, I'm the same. I mean, I've met Pat maybe 3-4 times.
Oh, yeah.
Not that often, you know. But whenever I mean, he was a guest at my show in Brighton. That was the third time I met him, I think. And I'd spent more time with him and his wife then than any other time. And I found him absolutely delightful to speak to and spend time with. You know, really, a really well-educated guy who has a lot, you know, he's has so much to give. You know, so many things that he has knowledge about. And his passion for comics and stories.
Even now.
Yeah, you can't deny that, you know.
Yeah,
and that, yeah, even now. I mean, I need to pick up Space Warp. Actually, I haven't.
I haven't seen it yet.
Picked it up yet? But I will be. You know, because I do like his writing. But you know, how many writers, you know, stick at it for that long and stay that passionate? Not many, I don't think. You know,
I think most now would just work on their Netflix deal and then or Amazon Prime and then see what happens after that.
Actually, it's funny how many guys I've spoken to on this podcast, you know, either on the podcast or off air have said, you know, I'm just waiting for that sweet Netflix deal. And I don't blame them, I guess, but you know, I mean, what happens after the Netflix deal? You know, do you retire from comics? Do you just use it to fuel more ideas, or is it the be all and end all? You know,
You know, it's like there's, I don't know, I'm not sure if I'd ever self-publish anything myself, but there are ideas that I thought of over the years, which I thought, oh yeah, that's good. I'll make little notes over the years. I'll draw little bits and pieces. Then a film comes out. You think, oh, that's Nick Duff. Scrap that. And you think, oh, I remember watching something and I come up with this idea. I thought, oh, that's really nice and visual. I saw it happen in Avatar then. I went, bugger. And you think, you know, you leave it too long, somebody else is going to do it. That's the problem.
Inevitable. Yeah. Mm. I mean, I suppose a lot of people would say, do it and stop them, you know, by doing it yourself. And that was one of the questions I was going to ask you, actually, if you had any sort of ideas or if you wanted to ever self-publish or, you know, do something creator-owned.
Yeah, you know, I got certain ideas I like to do and maybe... I don't know, it's like the Marvel DC thing. I still like superheroes, but they're not for me now. I'm, you know, in my head, I think they really should be for teenagers, should be getting into it. And if you're an adult and enjoy it, great. But I'm finding more and more written for middle-aged people.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I like to do some of my own ideas and they'd probably tell a story how I'd like to be done, but I'm no writer. You know, I could probably come up with an idea of a plot, but I'd have to have somebody to...
I suppose it's something you could do maybe with a writer, isn't it? Like working on something that you both own.
Yeah.
So, someone like Rob or...
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, he's...
I get him drunk one day.
You get him drunk. Get him to agree to it, Pinning you down, Rob. Because I mean, he's constantly coming out with great ideas, isn't he?
And I've spoken with Alec Worley as well, so it's just one of those things. Everyone's in lockdown, and when you're
what time,
most of these deals are done at 2 o'clock in the morning at a comic convention, probably one of yours.
People have said that to me actually. They've said, oh, yeah, that began at ICE. That happened in the bar at ICE. It's like, okay, well, I'll take the credit, even if I don't get any royalties. But it's a nice thought, actually. When someone does say that, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, we got together in the bar at your show or Comics Uncovered or whatever, and we created this. You think, oh, that is really nice that something that you put on has enabled something creative to happen, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm it's sure they've done it anyway.
You know, you don't get to meet face to face. So, and when you do, and you say you do click with people. As I said earlier, it's like none of my friends are into comics. Mm. The only one I really geek out with is my brother. So it's great to get away to a convention, and you're not inhibited anymore. You just, I could talk about Batman, and nobody would care.
Yeah, it's a wonderful feeling. I remember my first convention. I went with a friend of mine who was into comics. It was a UCAC, obviously, because I am obviously an age.
We all did UCAC. People of a certain age all did UCAC.
But wasn't that, I don't know about you, you could probably remember your first UCAC as well.
Yeah.
The most, one of the most exciting days of your life, you know, just to, aside from the birth of children or, you know, but just to go into a room where everybody is into what you're into. That was, you can't beat that, can you? That's a great feeling.
And it was probably one of the first times I actually saw it as an industry. As a job, because you saw, oh, there's Dan Jurgens. He draws and writes Superman. And there's, you know, I remember seeing Joe Quesada. Is it Quesada? Quesada?
Quesada, yeah. Well, I pronounce it Quesada. Sorry if I'm wrong, Joe.
But I remember he turned up at UCAC and he was just drawing the Ray comic. And he just sat there.
I love that.
Not a soul around him. He just sat there sketching away. And I just went over and just looked over his shoulder and watched him draw. And it was just one of those things. Nowadays, they all have cues and doing.
Yeah.
But they were just there. And, you know, you just, I remember seeing John Walter Jr. Mm. I remember seeing Jim Lee, but I was a pro then. I was still impressed, though.
Was that when he came to Bristol?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was a good show, that was. I remember seeing Jim. I met him. I said hello to him. He won't remember because, you know, lots of people. It was one of those things where you just wanted to shake his hand and say, thanks. Yeah. Thanks for all that good stuff that you've done, you know. Yeah. He did some great work, you know.
Yeah, definitely. But one of the funniest ones at the when Joe Quesada was editor-in-chief at Marvel, and it was one of the Bristol ones.
I remember that.
I've never seen so many pros offer their chair in my life. He walked into the bar. I must have saw about 30 people. Oh, do you want a chair? Do you want a chair?
Oh, God. Oh, dear me. Oh, it's painful, isn't it? It is. But yeah, I remember him visiting Bristol. It was a big deal at the time because Marvel hadn't done a show, had they, for you know, for a while. They certainly, I don't think they'd done a Bristol before. So for them to have a presence, you know, and Joe Quesada as well, you know, in his big Hawaiian shirt. Yeah. What a character.
I think that was the time when Grant Morrison just flew in on the night and he just sauntered in his white suit with a supermodel girlfriend. And it was almost like a dream. It was bizarre. You know, if you weren't there, you wouldn't have believed it.
No.
It was like seeing that unicorn in Blade Runner just walking
through it. You can't deny the character of Grant Morrison, can you? Love him or loathe him, he is a unique individual. Without a doubt. And I love that about comics as well, is the characters, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the people, you know, are just, they're just unique, aren't they? I can put it really.
And that's, you think, you can't imagine doing them anything else.
No.
They have to do comics, and that's it.
They're no good for nothing else, are they?
No. How would they function in any other walk of life?
Actually, a lot of my like closer friends who are comic artists, they say that to me, you know. They say, well, I couldn't do anything else. I couldn't do a job. Could go to a factory or drive a taxi or function in any other way. It's like, I've got to do this. So there you go.
I did branch out for a proper job once.
Oh, really?
What was that? I did teacher training.
Oh, did you? Was that to teach art?
Yeah, teach art. Mm. And I was a teacher for sort of 2 years.
All right.
And then my contract ended and I was drawing comics a little bit around it. And then I was going for the job interviews and I think they probably knew my heart wasn't in it. And Matt offered me to draw Savage and that was my back in to comics. Wow. I almost had a little break in between for a couple of years.
Wow.
Because I was doing some work for, what's it called? Games Workshop. That was it.
Ah, really?
And they folded. And so work was really tight. And I think I had a knee-jerk reaction and did teacher training for 9 months.
Yeah.
Which was hell.
I bet. But, you know, probably wise, it's not the most secure work in the world, is it? Yeah. Freelance art. You know, in any field, whether it's comics, illustration or whatever, it's not. It's really hard sometimes to feel that you have job security. It's probably wise if you're in that situation to give yourself other options.
Yeah. It's like, you know, I explained to sort of my non-comic friends and because they all think, oh, you talk comics, you're amazing, you must be super rich. I mean, no, it's, I say I'm like a jobbing actor. Like, yeah, you know, I get work, but the top 5%, they're the ones you see in Hollywood. They're the ones you see in there who do super well. But everyone else is just fighting for the work half the time. Just
fighting to survive, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you still feel like that there's this chance that you could go into that sort of realm of being in the top five? You know, do you feel that ambition? Do you feel the ambition to try, or are you sort of content in your role as a jobbing artist?
I'm probably more content now. Mm. I think 30 years ago or 20 years ago, I thought I'd be so-and-so better. And then you just see so many artists come out now and you think, oh my God, another one. Yeah. And they're just such amazing work at times, you know. You know, I'll buy a postage stamp by John Paul Leon. Yeah. And I think he's just stunning artist.
Oh, isn't he amazing? Yeah, I love his stuff. Yeah.
And, you know, I'll buy anything. And I just say, my God, how can he do it?
Yeah, you know, it's weird, isn't it? It's all in stages, because there will be people who think that about you. You know, how does he do it? It's genuinely, because you are an exceptionally good artist, you know. And it's funny, isn't it, that someone like yourself can then feel like that about one of your contemporaries. And it just goes to show that we always, as artists, we're always full of not self-doubt so much, but we do question ourselves a lot, don't we?
You know, you question yourself just drawing, laying out a page, your choices. Is that the best way? And you're always second guessing yourself constantly. Mm. And I read Brian Hitch, and you can tell confidence plays a huge part. How comfortable he is when he's drawing.
Yeah,
he seems to be. You can knock out the pages when he's on a high, when he's just really happy with things. And when, you know, most jobs, when you're sort of struggling, it's harder to you know, just get the work out there.
Yeah,
and everything's a struggle. But I think confidence, once you're sort of comfortable with how you're drawing, it makes things easier. But you know, I'll always know there's something I've done wrong on a page, or something I wish I could have done better.
Yeah.
And then you look at the top 5% artists, and you think, oh my God, how on earth are they doing that?
Yeah.
But you don't know what their circumstances are like. Have they spent 3 days on that page? Chris Sammy depressed me though. Oh, his artist edition. He puts a little timer. How long each page takes him. 3.5 hours. Yeah. You're having a laugh.
Yeah, incredibly good. Incredibly instinctive, isn't he? How he creates, you know, his lines, very, very, what looked to be simple, but his choices of where, you know,
that's exactly right. His choices, his storytelling, everything that needs to be there is there.
Yeah. It's incredible. I'm in awe of that guy. I really am.
Yeah, me too.
And another one for me like that, who had that ability to just put the right line, was Darwin Cook.
Oh, yeah.
Every page he ever produced was just perfection.
I just got his absolute New Frontier. I know. I had the trade paperbacks before, had the comics, but I thought, I saw it, I went, I'll treat myself.
I haven't got that. I've got the comics, but I haven't got the omnibus. I bet
it's just all his sketches in the back and his ideas. And he's just, you know, such a talent.
Yeah.
And as you said, every line was exactly where it's supposed to be.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I'm jealous of, you know, that ability to do. And I'm sure there was a lot, you know, there's work that goes into it. But when you see someone like Chris Sandler, who could do it so quickly, so instinctively, you just think, bloody hell, how, you know, they obviously there's a lot of work over the years to have that ability. You know, like we were saying before, you have to put the work in. It doesn't, you know, but then someone like that, you do think there's got to be some innate talent. There's got to be some ability within that human being that, you know, I just ain't got. But no, it's been a pleasure to talk to you tonight.
Oh, you too, Shane.
It really has, mate. It's been nice to catch up and all that sort of stuff and just talk about comics, as I promised that we would.
My comics fix.
And it's been really nice to hear about, you know, how you got into it and all that sort of thing.
Pleasure.
If people want like a commission from you, do you do stuff like that?
People either contact me on Twitter or Instagram, and that's the main one that really...
It's just Patrick Goddard, is it?
Yeah.
You got a website or...?
Don't have a website, and I'm not that organised. On Twitter, I am Paddy God One.
Ooh, I like that.
And Instagram, yeah, Paddy G 74.
Great stuff.
Give away my age on that one.
Ooh, yeah. You're a little bit younger than me. You look about 10 years younger, but there you go.
Oh, I look this age of 24, so I'm just caught up with my age.
Brilliant. Well, thanks again for chatting with me, Patrick. It's been an absolute pleasure. Hopefully the next time we talk, it'll be face to face at a convention.
Yeah, having a nice beer.
Yes, definitely a nice beer. Have yourself a great evening, mate.
You too, Shane. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye.